For the actual relevant stuff. This is a performance by Jeffrey Scudder, aka JS. Jeffrey is on tour with this performance. This is his 41st time he's doing it. And it's titled Radical Digital Painting. And well, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So, it's the last day of Chaos Computer Congress, and I'm here from America to present to you a little thing called Radical Digital Painting. And Radical Digital Painting is going to be a bit of extreme painting theory combined with some new software inventions for different painting-related things. So if you're interested in painting, this will definitely be interesting to you. If you think Joseph Beuys would have used Linux, then this is also going to be very interesting. If you sometimes watch Steve Jobs do presentations, you might also find this sort of interesting. But let's begin with a bit of painting theory. Right. So to start, we're going to be talking today about digital painting. And digital painting is a very interesting topic, right? So we have these two words. We have the word digital, and we also have the word painting. So let's bring the lights up just a little bit. Let's bring the stage lights up. Yeah, that's right. Right, so we want to talk about these two words, digital and painting. And when we think about digital things, we generally think of digital things as being what? As being reproducible, right? So, for example, if we were to have the simplest possible digital image, it would have to be an image that looked something like this, right? It would have to basically be a one-by-one pixel image, something that you would see like here. So let's do that in black and white because we're in one-bit mode, right? So here we have a kind of black and white single image, right? It's going to be a one-by-one pixel image, something like that. Now, as we know, this pixel, this bit, can either be filled in or not filled in. It can be filled in or not filled in. So here's an example that's not filled in, right? But if you only have an image that's one by one pixel and it can only be two colors, then you can really only have two possible images, right? So that's a bit about digital things, right? So digital things are kind of reproducible and they're made of information, right? We all know digital file formats and such, you can reproduce them. So what makes digital things special is that we have these sort of info formats that we define, right? Standards that we define. But what actually makes painting interesting? What makes painting interesting has nothing to do with reproducibility. As a matter of fact, it has everything to do with the fact that things aren't necessarily reproducible, right? So for example, here I have a small painting of me as a kid, as you can see here. And so, you know, what's nice about this is that you can see all the sort of material details. You can see all the little, you know, oh yeah, you can see, yeah, it's in depth, right? This kind of shit, you can't really make this stuff out of information, right? This is some special shit, right? This is some unique ass material arrangement shit that we're dealing with here, right? So that's basically what we value in painting, right? What we love about painting is the fact that it's kind of a unique object, right? There can only really be one painting, right? And so that's kind of also how painting sort of, is sold for a lot of money, right? Because you can't really reproduce it. So if we're going to seriously talk about the ontological issues surrounding digital painting, right? What digital painting actually is it's kind of these things getting sort of smashed together, right? It's the idea that you are going to be painting with a medium that is reproducible and is not necessarily valued based on its uniqueness, but in a tradition that does value things based on its reproducibility, or non-reproducibility, as I would say. So digital painting is kind of an interesting topic in that sense. So as I was saying, the simplest possible digital painting would have to be a one-by-one pixel image that could either be black or white. But as we all know, digital image formats don't necessarily have to be shown on a computer, right? So here we are on the screen, and I could give you a little example of this kind of image here, right? I could basically say, all right, we're gonna use this super cool painting program that I made that allows you to paint one pixel, paintings. So now we have a black painting, and now we have a white painting, right? And so, just like I was showing you before, this is basically our one-by-one pixel image, but it's not defined by the computer itself, right? We're talking about abstract thought here, right? In the same sense that Albert Einstein would go ahead and he would have a, you know, Albert Einstein was, would have like a blackboard or something like that, and he would go to the blackboard and he would say, E equals MC squared. Right? Now, it doesn't necessarily matter that this is projected on a camera. It doesn't matter what pen I draw this with, right? Because what we care about in information is we care about the actual ideas that are presented to us, right? We don't necessarily care about the fact that it's on paper. We just care about the fact that it's, you know, that the formula is there, right? That the info relationships are there. So that's basically what we're, you know, what we're kind of, you know, thinking about when it comes to digital painting. So here we can change the color of these things, like this. But then we can get into some other ideas, right? What if we were gonna go, what if we were gonna go up in resolution? What if we were gonna use more than one pixel, right? What if we were gonna go so high in resolution that we could do a 2x2 pixel image? Oh yeah, 2x2, right? Then you can start to do a couple more different things. But then what if we were gonna do a 4x4 pixel image? Right? We can still sort of pick one pixel at a time, but then if we were going to do an 8x8, you know, then things start to get a bit interesting. Right around this point, when you have this much information, you can actually start to draw a mark and see that you can actually draw a mark, right? If you're only using one pixel, you don't necessarily, you're not really able to create paint strokes, right? You're not really able to create marks, if you will. So a bit more about that. Let's talk now about the concept of resolution, because resolution is an extremely interesting topic, especially when it comes to making images. Now, if you were going to go to the Apple store and you were going to buy the brand new iPad Pro, you know, the iPad Pro is super cool. It's got like 300, 400 pixels per inch, you know, super high resolution on that thing. But that's basically thinking about resolution from the point of view of the consumer, right? I want to talk about resolution this morning from the point of view of the maker. So we're going to talk about resolution in terms of behavior. We're going to talk about how different levels of resolution actually change the behaviors that are possible in different kinds of images. So that's basically what we're going to be looking at. Right. So we already talked a little bit about low resolution, and we can represent low resolution with a couple of little candies like this. So here we are down in the depths of low resolution. Something like that. Very nice. Low resolution. And I think we're going to put on some hue shift. Get a little bit of action. So, this is low resolution, right? We only have 4 pixels here. And of course, a pixel is just short for picture element. So it doesn't necessarily matter what we're using, right? Whether we're using squares on a screen or whether we're, you know, whether we're sort of using, you know, these Haribo candies here. Like, we can kind of, you know, we could rip these apart and different kinds of things. Anyway, so low resolution. The primary thing you do at low resolution is you arrange things one by one. So if I wanted to create a kind of interesting image here, I could basically, I could basically do this and do that, right? Now I can undo something or I can redo something, so I can say, oh, I don't like that right there. But then I can undo that, right? So you get some interesting concepts over here at low resolution. You get, first of all, you get the basic idea that you have the, whoops, that pen doesn't work. You get the basic idea of the artistic composition itself. So the whole idea of the composition you get here. So you get the composition. And then you get this other cool idea about the undoing and redoing of things. So let's show a bit of that. So you can undo and redo stuff. But basically what you're doing at low resolution is you're arranging things. So this is the level of resolution where your primary behavior is one of arrangement. Now, if we're going to go up to a higher resolution, we want to get some more pixels in our image, right? We need some more shit. Yeah, more information. More information. So if we wanted to, you know, deal with an image that had this many pixels, right, we wouldn't just arrange things one by one because this is a very short talk and we don't have a lot of time. So the primary thing that we're going to do here is we're going to start to carve through or move around multiple pixels in aggregate. And as I was saying before, so we're going to say this is a medium resolution kind of idea. As I was saying before, this is only something that is kind of possible when you have enough bits, right? When you have enough information. So over here on low resolution, if I were to try to make a mark, right? It doesn't really look like I can represent a mark. I can't carve a path because there's so few pieces of information that you can't actually see how that thing was made. But here, I could of course go through and you could start to see a trace of a path. So only when you have a certain amount of information can you represent stuff. So really at medium resolution, we get the ability to do mark making. We can finally do mark making over here at medium resolution. Now, if we wanted to get to an even higher level of resolution, in other words, high resolution, we're gonna talk about high resolution. But to do high resolution, we're going to need a super, super, super high resolution technology, right? We're gonna need something extremely high res. We're going to need a technology called VersaFine. Captures the fine details like no other, right? So for VersaFine, now pay attention to what happens here at high resolution. Pay attention to what happens. Okay, one more. Right. Now let's bring the music down just for a second. Because high resolution, if you notice, it's very interesting. High resolution is a very interesting kind of thing because I didn't begin with information, right, on the page. I actually began by scanning something in, right? The first thing that I did was I imprinted or I sort of copied my fingerprint and then I made a reproduction, right? So high resolution is a super interesting behavior. It's basically where scanning becomes possible. It's the behavior in which you can finally scan something in, right? And we all know high resolution is all about the BDE, right? The big data energy, right? So people who are interested in high resolution things tend to be like governments and, you know, surveillance and stuff like that, right? And the interesting thing about things at high resolution is, you know, you care about all this information. So if I were to delete this fingerprint, I can't really get it back, right? So here you have the idea that you can undo or redo something in low resolution. In medium resolution, you can create a mark and you could erase the mark, but you could also redraw the mark. So you can erase like that. And of course, at high resolution, there you go, you can erase. And at high resolution, you can actually delete something. So that's a quick overview of resolution as a model of behavior, as opposed to a model of, you know, just simple detail or fidelity, right? Usually when we're going to buy an HD TV or a fancy iPad, we want the highest resolution, but if we're making images, we might often want the lowest resolution or the medium resolution. And you can start to look at this graph as a kind of chart, and you can start to think about different creative software that allows you to manipulate information in different ways, right? For example, Photoshop, Adobe Photoshop might be somewhere around here on the chart, where it has features for manipulating high-resolution images and features for manipulating medium-resolution images. And something that's a low-resolution sort of editor might be, oh, you know, we're at CCC, so we might say Emacs or Vim is, you know, basically designed to move individual components around one by one, right? You're arranging individual things compositionally. So when you're writing or you're composing music with notes or, you know, even if you're using Adobe Illustrator, for example, Adobe Illustrator. Yeah. even if you're using Adobe Illustrator, you know, you're basically, the primary thing you're doing is moving things around one by one. And you can start to actually look at people this way. You could say graphic designers tend to be better at arranging things. Painters tend to be better at making marks. Photographers tend to be better at shooting scans. But for now, we're going to get into a bit of software. That's right. We're going to look at some drawing software that I've created that jumps around this graph in different places. So, first one. This is a very, very simple one. You might be saying, okay, Jeffrey, this is going to be the stupidest drawing program I've ever seen. Hi. Now, what I'm doing here is I'm basically just copying and pasting things from a square. And so this is it's a very simple drawing tool, kind of like the first one that I showed you. And it's basically about arranging things, right, one by one. Now, I kind of believe in a concept of innovation as it is related to You know, I sort of think innovation occurs anytime you change the speed or space of a given technology. So you might be saying, okay, Jeffrey, this is kind of a lame painting program because all you can do is, you know, copy this square and move it around. And I can do that in Photoshop. I can go into Photoshop. I can hit the rectangular marquee tool. I can hit Command C, Command V, or whatever, and I can basically do the same exact thing. But because you can only do this operation in this software, and because it's sped up, I would argue that it gives you a different kind of browsable image space, right? And as we were talking earlier, I would basically say that if you think about this idea of that one pixel image being only black and white, right? You can only make two possible images if you have one bit of information. If you expand that concept out to even 1280 by 720, which is the resolution we're looking at here, if you expand that concept out, then you can still only have actually a limited configuration of information, right? So every drawing program in that sense, once you have it sort of defined your borders, you've also sort of defined the limits of what is possible in that program. So I tend to think of painting software not so much as tools for creating images, but tools for browsing different kinds of possibilities within a sort of given image space. All right, so for example, let's just change not the speed, but the space of that software. So we're going to do basically the same operation at the same speed, but in a different space, right? Now we're using circles instead. And so here we can do a little Pokemon type of thing. Hi. Something kind of basic and cute like that. And of course it's copy and paste, right? So we could do something like that here. We could take this off and sort of start to think maybe this is gonna be some hands or something. Right? So it's the same basic software, but I've changed the space, right? And I would say as soon as you change the space or the speed of a software, that's where you can actually see some technological innovation. So that's where new technology gets created. And often, I think, at least in my case, the best technologies are often simple reconfigurations of, you know, engineering problems that have already been solved. Moving on. We're going to go full Steve Jobs now. We're going to take out an Apple device because we're going to look at some iOS software. So here we're talking about jumping between perhaps the idea that you can create a scan or you can create an arrangement of scans. So here's a little program that allows me to make some things like this. I'll do a little face here. Maybe this guy. Nice. And maybe we'll get some ears. And we'll do this one. This is called finger quilts. It's very basic kind of software, and we could go and use my face. Right. So that's basically a kind of finger quilt software. And of course we could get the sound guy in there, we could get some of the audience, but then they didn't sign release forms, so we have to delete his image and things like that. Right. So that's basically finger quilt. And we can also think about the idea of going to taking scans with marks, right? So here's a program called, Twitter follower. That's some CCC style, right? So here we are thinking about a different kind of idea. Now what we can do is we can do something like this, where we can make a mark, but the mark is coming directly from the camera. So we're scanning in things, but it's basically slowing down the process of photography, if that makes sense. And actually, if we want to switch to this desk camera here, you can see a bit more in action. Let's switch to this camera, if it's possible. Nice. So you can get a sense now. So I have this thing here, and then you can see I can sort of grab things from underneath the camera. So it becomes a kind of compositional tool that combines photography and drawing in one single sort of action. Okay, switch back to the other camera. Thank you. All right, so that's Shrub. And now I'm going to show you another little simple one. And you can actually go to this one right now. You can go to this URL. This is a live URL, everybody. This is a live hack. No, it's just a live website. So you can go to the software. This is basically a simple program that paints automatically. It's called NoPaint. And if you don't like what it's painting, you can just say no. And it will start to paint something else. So you can say no, 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 no. And if you like it, you can say paint, and it'll start to paint something new for you. So paint basically freezes the stroke and continues on to something else. Paint, paint, no, no. And I often like, that's kind of nice. So then you can pause, and then you can save the image and draw on it or do whatever you will. I kind of think about this as sort of my SCOBY. Like if anybody makes kombucha, this is sort of my SCOBY for digital painting. So it's kind of a sketching tool where I can generate an image, but then I draw on top of it, right? So it's a sort of sweet spot between generating and then saying you like something or don't like something. It's inspired by this software called PicBreeder, which is a pretty excellent project. Right. But that's enough Steve Jobs. So let's go back to the open web where we've been this whole time. Right? Let's go back to some cool web-based software. I'm going to show you now. Well, let's take a short interlude because I am a painter and I make digital paintings. So I'm going to show you some of my digital paintings here. Move this out of the way. So here's some of my digital paintings. This is a 512 by 512 image. There's a little worm here. And some other things, some computery symbols, yeah, 765, you know, we're counting backwards, yeah, stuff like that. I always sign my paintings, like, with the year, the month, the day, the hour, the minute, and the latitude and the longitude, very often. Look at another one. This is me driving my car. It's a Volvo 1993. As you can see here, it says, I love my car. And then here's me, yeah. I'm kind of crashing it, like, and there's my mom. She's like, oh, Jeffrey, you crashed your car. I'm so sad. You know, that kind of thing. Worried mom, Jeffrey crashing his car in the middle of the night, you know, speeding across. That's right. So here's another one. This is one that's painted on my phone. And when I draw on my phone, I use a lot of photography. This is kind of a nice little software of mine as well. This is a sort of PowerPoint presentation is also a drawing tool, so if I want to add some evil eyes to my toast, then I can go ahead and do that. There's some networking equipment here hidden in the picnic table. Here's some more. This is a nice motivational poster. It says, you're weirder than the weed and stronger than the coffee. Very nice. And here's a nipple piercing that I've turned into a reindeer there. A bit of poetry. Here's my niece, Aspen. She lives in Alaska. And then here's a kind of a portrait of her. And then she also draws on her tablet too. So here's a drawing she did on her Amazon Kindle. Here's some more. I often will put my face in the picture as well. Instagram generation, blah, blah, blah. This is some more sexual content. So here we have a butt plug that has been turned into a spider, as you can see here. And then everyone knows late at night when you're looking at your Microsoft IntelliMouse Explorer 3.0 and you're seeing the LEDs come out of the back of the mouse that it looks like lips. So I took a photo of that and turned it into these lips. Everyone knows that, right? So here's here's one that's made entirely in that finger quilt software. So this is an extension cord, basically an extension cord that I was moving around on the lawn, like in the yard, and taking photos of it. So this is just made in a few minutes with that one software. The iPhone software. Here's one more. Here's some newer ones. Now, the primary way that I show my paintings is I show them live like this in sort of slideshow format. Because the thing is, when you're painting with information, or when the thing that you're kind of thinking about is information, we're back at the beginning now. When you're painting with information, you kind of have to think about the way in which you display things a bit differently, right? So I sort of like to think about my paintings as being more like poetry, right? So, you know, poetry is traditionally an art form that's made of information, and so there's all different ways in which that could be viewed, right, or looked at. So I tend to think about digital painting as something that doesn't necessarily have to be exhibited on a wall or printed out. Of course, you can do that, but I think that because it's information, it opens up all new possibilities for display. All right, so now I'm going to show you the very first drawing program that I've created. But where's my time cards? How am I doing on time? Good. Good on time. OK. So this is a piece of software called the Polygon Replicating Bitmap Authoring Tool. It's a very, very cool one. It's the first one that I ever wrote. And I did this for my undergraduate thesis. So when I opened up Photoshop, basically, I was like, watching my friend sleeping, my beautiful art student friend, Alex, and I was like, oh, it's like very romantic. I'm gonna make a nice portrait of Alex on my Wacom tablet. It's gonna be super cool. And then that's why I opened up Photoshop with my Wacom and she was sleeping in the studio and it was like, I had a candle. It was very, very nice, like atelier style digital painting. And then I opened up Photoshop and it takes like 30 seconds to load and it goes all through all the creators. And then it's like, what is the width and height of your image? And I was like, oh man, like way to break the mood, Photoshop. You know, like I don't wanna just give you two numbers. I want to give you more information. I want to give you a whole bunch of numbers. I don't want to think about rectilinear images. I want to think about shaped-based images like this, right? So this is a software where you don't actually enter the width and height of your image at the beginning, but you enter in the sort of shape of your image. And then if you actually want to draw things, you have to draw the shapes of your brushes. So here I am. I've created a brush. And I can now draw with that brush. Like that. So we'll make another one here. We'll do a little pill. Yeah, like that. We can give it, we can do some four-dimensional copy and paste, right? So I can record a mark and then hold the mouse down, and then I can repeat that mark anywhere, like that. Of course, orientation is also a big deal. You know, if you're drawing on paper, you can easily rotate the page. So I made it so you can easily rotate the image. We'll do some cutouts here. So here's a cutout brush, like that. You can also rotate the brush. If you keep rotating the brush, it'll sort of go on its own. And so what I can do here is I can make a little drawing machine. Like kind of Kraftwerk drawing machine, techno, right? And then we can do another cutout, so I'll cut out this whole thing, yeah. And we'll do one of these. Get down like that. Great. We'll change the background color to black. Yeah. Maybe we'll, also if you spin this around, the canvas can keep spinning. So I'll show you a bit of that. You can draw like this. This is basically designed with a WASD kind of, WASD kind of thing, right? So if you look at all the keyboard shortcuts, they're all kind of WASD and mouse, because I was a big sort of Quake player. You know, I played a lot of Deathmatch growing up. And so when I came to painting, I was like, painting could be kind of like playing a Quake game in a way, at least the software that I made. Right. So this is a pretty interesting piece of software, and my friend was like, oh, Jeffrey, this software is super cool. I really love this program, but you know what I really want? I really want to be able to flip an image around. You know, I want to be able to mirror something. And I was like, oh man, mirroring is really lame. You don't, like, you know, you basically want to flip something horizontally, right? And I thought, well, the best way to flip something horizontally would be if you could somehow improvise that flip. And so I thought, what if you could just turn the image around and there you could get your horizontal flip like that. So here I am doing a bit of improvisational horizontal flipping. Whew. Now, of course, you can also add the vertical flipping. And then, of course, the spin and blah, 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 blah. Now, most creative software is also a modal application design. And this is what's unique about this is that it's non-modal. So, for example, if I wanted to, you know, switch, if I wanted to just use all the tools at the same time, I could do that, right? So I could build more complicated drawing machines. I could also put the surface on a bit of a shake as well, right? So you can do all these features at once. I can change colors while drawing and blah, 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 blah. Right, so that's the Polygon Replicating Bitmap Authoring Tool. Quite an interesting drawing program. And I have one more drawing program that I'm going to show you. And if we could just quickly switch to the top camera once more, I'll show you this controller. Yeah, so this is the controller that uses it. You can see in the bottom left of the screen, I'm using these dials to control all the properties. And we can switch back. I think we can switch back to the camera now. Great. So this is basically an etch-a-sketch, as they say, on acid. So you can record these little dots, like this. Now, many of you may know, the smart engineers in the audience, that your brain has a kind of dedicated piece of hardware for recognizing faces right? That is very, very old. It's in reptiles as well. Reptiles can recognize faces. But if, as soon as you rotate the face around, that part of your brain flips off, right? And when the face becomes right side up, it flips back on again. So if you were to spin a face around, you're sort of tickling your brain in an interesting way. Now, of course, if you spin it really, really fast, that tickles a completely different part of your brain, so we're not going to talk about that quite yet. But let's make another one. Now, in Germany, you guys are really also great engineers, and in the future, there's probably going to be, well, you might be driving down the Autobahn, right? Fun, fun, fun on the Autobahn, you know, like that kind of thing. But you're not actually going to be driving, right? It's going to be more of a Tarkovsky kind of thing. You're going to be just a passenger, and instead you're going to be in a self-driving car. And the traffic lights are going to change too, right? In the future, the traffic lights aren't necessarily going to be traffic lights readable by humans. They're going to be more like traffic lights readable by a machine. So here's sort of a concept design for a traffic light, where, you know, the traffic light might be blinking with different colors and different softnesses or alpha levels and things like that. So I do think that if you're designing something like a QR code, or if you're designing something that's going to be put on the road or something like that in the future for machines to read, you should also think about the fact that humans are going to see that too, but you have a lot of artistic potential there for something being both machine readable and human appreciatable. Right, so here's a futuristic, 5 minutes, great. So here's a futuristic traffic light, and now I'm gonna bring up something I baked up a little bit earlier. We cooked this up a little earlier. Something like that, right. And we're gonna head over into the raster mode, where we can actually use these things as brushes, like this. Now, of course, this is sort of a wallpaper designer, right? So I can switch to this first one, hi. And we can do some stamps. We can get some more space. We can rotate. But then it's all sort of repeated on a pattern. Let's head over to our traffic light. Let's do a bit of drawing. Like that. Okay, but let's enter into a different zone. Because of course, when you spin things around, you get some nicer effects. So now we're into that different part of your brain. Not the part of your brain that recognizes faces, but something very different. Hi, I'm back. Destabilize. Anyway, so we leave this here for now. And yeah, so the last thing I want to show you is a thing called 10-minute painting, and I think that's going to cut into the questions a little bit because it's 10 minutes long, but we're going to run that right now, and then we're going to have just 2 or 3 minutes for questions, I believe, if that makes sense. So let's bring up the volume.
10-minute painting by JAS.
Thank you very much.
2017, August 7th at 7:30 p.m. Sender 1.0.0. Compiled for Academy Schloss Solitude and ZKM Center for Art and Media. Web URL, 10minutepainting.com. What are the forms of non-painting and what are the non-forms a painting may take? Painter David Hockney once said, video brings its time to you, and you bring your time to painting, and that difference will always be there. What would it be like to play a painting? It would be the most beautiful thing in the system. It would be more beautiful than the platform itself. A beautiful painting is a painting that can be run over and over again. You are looking at a painting comprised of many wayward bits. Listen, a beautiful painting is a poem that can be executed over and over again. Repetition is the only thing that makes something less random than it already is. Video games are the most recent form of filmmaking known to the human retina. That is why video games are rarely escaping for books. Books, like video games, are alive only in the moments they are being read. Top mathematicians and painters often work at the same scale. The professor's large mural-sized black board serves as a liminal space by which abstractions are developed, whereas the painter's substrate serves as an indelible artifact of material arrangement. Professors have just as much of a fetish for their tools as all painters do. They prefer Hagoromo, a discontinued brand of Japanese chalk, over anything else, and are keen on porcelain surfaces. They enjoy the lyrical mark-making capability of chalk, and even share techniques like breaking the stick in two and drawing with its side to render calligraphic lines. A viral video of physics professor Walter Moon's blackboard work shows this fetish is shared by a much wider audience. There is a collective disdain for dry-erase whiteboards, which are often derived as inferior in capability and more difficult to maintain than the blackboard. Whiteboards operate in a more uniform world where their marks look consistent regardless of the individual that drew them. Perhaps this is why they are more popular in business meetings. They silence the aesthetic of the individual in favor of the group. All digital media objects exist as a collection of reproducible bits, and so, their materiality yields little meaning. Because of this, painting today aspires to be understood through a set of abstract terms, similar to those which have been developed for mathematics and poetry. A painting is just a kind of picture message. Video games are nothing less than stylized learning curves, and everyone knows video games are for total losers who live with their families. Paintbrushes, like guns and PlayStation controllers, are content management systems for your field of view. This is why painting is the best video game. World News as a landscape versus World News as a stream versus handwritten cursive in the margin of something printed. My mother is a great quilter, for what it's worth. The best way to consume a photograph is to take one immediately. Then you can hold it directly in front of your face. To arrange elements in a virtual space, one must define that space. Things that are real versus things that are fake versus. If a painting is defined as an abstract container capable of representing two colors, then there are only two possible paintings. If poems were only one letter long, using an alphabet containing two letters, then there would only be two possible poems. With an alphabet of seven letters, I can configure rainbows all fucking day. This program is now in dialogue with its own material delivery. The poem program you are looking at is comprised of over 65,536 reproducible picture elements or pixels. Each of these is capable of representing over 16.7 million colors. It takes place in real time, and like a deck of cards, it is the same no matter how it is shuffled. The icons appearing on the edge of the frame are used in lieu of a progress bar. You will see 124 of them, in addition to more flowers, by the time I stop speaking. My voice is triggered by the Web Speech Synthesis API. The sound it generates is dependent on the browser software implementers, your machine's operating system, and my personal preferences. The names we give to the constituents of a painting are more important than what they are actually made of. Paintings, like beds, are frames within which dreams are broadcast. The arithmetic for calculating the number of possible combinations of pixels here is more than 65,536 to the power of about 16.7 million. The resulting integer is very wide, but not infinite. Similar to web browsers, software like MacPaint or Photoshop allows users to surf these vast but limited visual spaces through opinionated means, such as plotting individual pixels, filling large regions, and filtering the entire set of pixels at once. Each new painting program or feature that gets introduced into the ecosystem allows for more focused and opinionated surfing of these spaces. Surfing is always more fun than permutation. If scratching is a process by which hidden things expose themselves, then we can say that all paintings are made from scratch. Gridded, linear arrangements of pixels make them easy for digital computers to read, but difficult for humans to process and memorize. Screen pixels are becoming smaller, more numerous, and less visible to the eye, and now we will consume a more open definition of them. Pixels need not be the same size, nor side by side in a grid. They don't need to be made of the same material. They can be as abstract as possible, determined only by the highest level of meaning they are able to obtain. By this understanding, Rothko's signature paintings are to be interpreted as just a few pixels in width and height, and several pixels deep. By raising the meaning of a pixel higher than that of a singly colored gridded unit, we can study paintings and modify or re-execute them as easily as if they were mathematical formula. I have a painting for you now. Three Swedish fish candies stare at one another in a circle. One is flipped over, another shiny. It has been sucked on and spit back out. A little square just appeared on the edge of the frame. It happened again. A wall is being built here in case you haven't noticed. Abstraction A, Abstraction B, S expression. If one doesn't have infinite scroll, it is necessary to invent it. Jack Kerouac hacked his typewriter to accept rolls of paper instead of sheets. Peace Pilgrim retired to a life of endless walking, and network information systems are engineered to update themselves without turning off. Schools are starting to teach cursive handwriting again. This poem's text is represented by a standardized possibility space limited to exactly 1,114,112 characters or code points. This is the exact opposite of cursive. It is for this reason that all punctuation marks are traffic signals. My commute is very pleasant here. There is enough time to play with my Tamagotchi.
Okay, so I have to cut it because we're out of time, but that's a bit of 10-minute painting, and this was radical digital painting. Thank you.